natural ability that's you can't coach. It's hard to coach.
For me, he's one of the most talented players in the country.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby Channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
OTB AM. With Gillette. Get into your flow with the new Gillette Labs Razor with exfoliating bar.
Tommy Walsh, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Gerard. Good morning, Owen.
It's exciting in that Limerick are giving us all at least the pretense that we're going to have a proper championship this year where there's doubt about the outcome. And as a result, everybody thinks they have a chance of winning it.
Yeah, and I suppose even if you go back to the Galway game, when Galway beat them, you know, they had a lad sent off. The conditions were terrible. So you could still make the excuse, listen, they're missing down a couple of players. They were down a man for a good 20, 25 minutes. And they still, you know, they were there right till the end. But I think the match against Cork at last weekend, that was a huge, I suppose, it's going to give a huge boost to every other county. Because, you know, Cork were so far away from in last year's All-Ireland final. Like every team nearly over the last year or two. And suddenly they beat Limerick. No matter what team Limerick had out, and there had a lot of big names out, they beat them by 9 points. So I think whatever it does to Limerick, it'll give a boost to the rest of the country, Ger.
We hadn't planned to talk about this, but it just struck me there that there's a lot of stuff in the papers today about the hand pass rule and people wanting it to be clamped down on in the championship as much as it's being clamped down on the league. And if you think back to the Dubs, certainly always thought that the rule changes around the kick out were all aimed at making Cluxton less important. Is there a sense in Limerick that the hand pass rule and clamping down on it is targeting them specifically? Will they be able to turn that into something, some kind of a chip on their shoulders maybe as the season goes on?
Probably many other things, Gerard, but I don't think the hand pass rule, because I think every player is nearly doing it at the moment. Why has it changed so much over the last couple of years? You go back 10, 15 years, when they get the ball, drive it as far as they can. Now it's all about finding the man in the best position, the lad coming off the shoulder. These are all the phrases you hear now in the dressing rooms. Don't give away the ball cheaply. And towards, like, you go back to 10, 15 years ago, if you gave a hand pass to a guy around the back line or an extra maybe short stick pass, the crowd would be on your back straight away. Now it's the thing to do. If you hit the ball long and it goes to the spare man, then the crowd are on your back. So the game has changed. So we're seeing far, you know, I'd say if you're to do stats on the amount of hand passes in the game today versus pick out a game 10, 15 years ago, I'd say it's dramatic, the difference. So it's always going to lead to guys trying to do it faster, trying to do it quicker. The tackling is ferocious at the moment. So you don't have time nearly to throw it up, you know, and give yourself a second to give a proper hand pass. So listen, it's a skill in the game. I'd be fully with, you know, the people behind the people that want it implemented, because we can't get to the stage where it's throwing the ball. Then, you know, it's a different game then. The hand pass is a skill in itself. You have to see space between the hand and the ball. Now, it's going to be difficult for referees to spot it. The game goes so fast. So I just think, like in the rugby, you have to see, you know, you have to see a foul before he can give it. A referee can't just guess. I think he's thrown it there. If he sees it, he calls it. And I think it's up to the guys like ourselves on the podcast, the Sunday game, these, not to be, I suppose, criticising the referees on these hand passes if they're calling it when they see it, as opposed to spotting every single one, because they won't be able.
And there's no sense that this is aimed at Limerick.
Then you're probably asking, you're probably asking Limerick, it's going to be a chip on their shoulder. Like, when you're the champions, they're going to get the criticism, and they're receiving the criticism at the moment for playing on the edge, niggly stuff. And they have to accept it, because if you play the game the way they play it, and you're the champions, they're there for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years after winning 3 All-Irelands, and people are going to want you. The media are going to want to get a dig at you. Your opposition are going to want to get a dig at you. Even the neutrals, they want to see new champions. That's just the way sport works. Seeing with Manchester United when they were going well in the Premier League, you've seen our own team. That's just life, you know. And I think John Kiely's an astute manager. He'll be able to turn it, as you said, to kind of a chip on their shoulder. They've proven him wrong. And I think that's, you know, Tommy Rooney said it to me there last week, are the hunters now becoming the hunted? It's 100% right. He's on the money with that. They are now the hunted by every county, by every player in the country, because you want the champions. You want to be the best team. Because they play, they're such a fiery kind of a team, that even brings out the passion even more in the opposition. So, yeah, I think they would bring a lot of things into that dressing room to give motivation for this year.
did seem Limerick were pretty okay with handling the hunted tag last year. Has that shifted somewhat? Does that lesson, does that mentality, that I guess, or it's almost a siege mentality, I guess, when everybody's after you, does that lessen over the years?
Well, Owen, I'd say there's a huge difference in the last 2 years versus this year with the crowds. We see, you know, the impact of a crowd. You go to Salt Hill, you go down to Nolan Park, you go to Crow Park with a full house and it's a 50-50 crowd. The opposition are going, and they're going to be louder when they're the underdogs and maybe they start getting a run on you. So I think the big difference they'll see now is the last couple of years, when, say, you know, a little fracas happened in a game, there wasn't too much impact from a crowd because there wasn't many people there. This time of year, there was no one at the game. So I think it's going to be huge, the crowd impact. Like you take when Cork start getting on top of you. Cork have always, going back traditionally through all the years on, they've brought outnumbered or probably opposition supporters nearly 2-1. A huge sporting county, huge followers. They'll follow their sporting teams to the ends of the earth. If they start getting a run on you, you will hear, you know, it's like being in, you know, Galatasaray over in Istanbul. That's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of atmosphere you will have. And I think that will definitely feed into it, Owen. And they won't have come across that the last year or two, Limerick.
Like, I mean, there was a commenter in the other day who tongue-in-cheek was suggesting that the water breaks have been the end of the...
I don't think it was tongue-in-cheek at all.
Well, like I was just about to say, like, is you talk about the crowds there and maybe you factor in the water breaks. Like, all of these little inches probably add up to something in the comparisons between now and 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, the water breaks, I think for supporters, it's great. You know, you like to see a free-flowing game. We've often seen how a game changes on the water break on. For players, it was kind of nice. You know, you come out for a game, give it socks for 15, 17 minutes, then you can recharge and focus again. So it's going to be a big difference, I'd say, for players, getting used to playing for the full 35, 38 minutes. And I think Limerick, what they have done over the last couple of games, they've started to introduce a few new players. Well, a lot of their top players are still playing. It seems to me, looking at their team sheets or the first three games, they kind of play two in every line, introduce a new lad, or maybe the likes of a David Reedy who wouldn't have gotten much game over the last couple of years. So John Kiely, I think, is trying to introduce a panel again, give lads games. Young Cottle O'Neill, centre forward, he's got a fantastic goal. Like, he knows he can play him now in the championship. So I think for John Kiely this year, during the league, he's trying to find new players that he can implement because he will need them come championship.
The point about the crowds too is, like, last year's Munster final, when the game looks gone from them, when it's 2-16 to 12 points at half time, Tipperary absolutely killed them, and there's the incident before half time where there could have been a red card and there wasn't. Maybe if there's a massive Tip crowd baying for blood, the referee has a slightly different decision to make, and history changes. So I think that's another, it's even just an agent of chaos that we don't fully understand what the outcome is going to be in those two. So again, all the more reason for us to look forward to this year's championship, because I definitely think at the end of last year when the All-Ireland final was over, it was like, what a great performance. It's brilliant to see a team reach a peak like that, but Jesus, is anybody ever going to catch them?
Yeah, and I think there's the beauty of the two sides of it there, Ger. Like, I remember watching the darts, you know, Phil the Power Taylor dominating the dart scene, and you'd be praying for a new champion, you know, as you would the underdog to come on and win. But then when he was gone, there was something missing. Like, I think we crave these geniuses, these great players, these great teams. It just gives you something to look forward to of a Sunday or a Saturday night. And that's what the joy of looking at this Limerick team is. They're not just a powerful team. Individually, they have just absolutely wonderful players like Keane Lynch, Aaron Gillan. Like, there's people, fans all over the country will go and see these guys just to see their individual performances. Kyle Hayes, you know, absolutely, after taking the game to new levels as a wing back, he plays as a forward and as a back. I've seen him against Limerick before the Garrod Hegarty incident. He shoved three or four lads out over the sideline. It was wonderful to watch. So Limerick individually have just majestic players that we all enjoy watching. And now the opposite is you said, Ger. Last year we said, is there anyone to touch him? Suddenly Cork are coming. Wexford are coming with a good team. Dublin are starting to be competitive. And I think the interesting thing with Cork we have to look at is, going back through the history of champions, they're always, nearly always, I suppose, the foundation of them is good under 21, good minor teams. You go back to the great Cork team during the 2000s, the Sean Oakes and the Don Logues, the Tom Kennys, the Rock. They won 221 All-Irelands, 97 and 98. You look at the Paddy Maher era, the Shamey Callan era with Tipperary. They won under 21 minor All-Irelands. You know, say Henry Shefflin, his team would never have won minors, but when he came to under 21, wins in under 21 All-Ireland. You look at the Dublin footballers who were winning, you know, under 21 footballers. Even the Wexford team at the moment, the Lee Chin, you know, Liam O'McGovern, all these guys won three under 21 Leinsters in a row, Ger. So this Cork team are not just coming out of nowhere. They're coming, they're after being in four under 21 All-Ireland finals. They're in one or two minor All-Irelands as well. So listen, there's a foundation behind this team. They seem to be starting to gather momentum now as well, playing a lovely style of hurling. They seem to have learnt tactically from last year's All-Ireland final, looking at last Sunday. They brought back young Mellerick, who was a Tigerish defender, and kind of half-marked Keane Lynch. They left the centre-back, Mark Coleman, you know, kind of free at times. So, yeah, listen, it's exciting to look at the opposition.
It's going to be very interesting when you talk about that and Limerick to see how it manifests itself in the summer. I think right now everybody accepts that it's just the league. But I just wanted to ask you on the football front, Tommy, because you've obviously got great experience of being in a team who won a series of All-Irelands in a row, just like the Dubs did when they did their six in a row. And all of a sudden things look like they've come crashing down a little bit. What's that experience like after you lose your first All-Ireland after winning four in a row? In your case, does it dent the confidence in the years after? Is it hard to get that sort of hunger back into the team?
Yeah, we were a little bit different in that we still had the same team, Owen. So when we got beaten in 2010 for the five in a row, it was just to recharge the batteries, come back with hunger, look at Tip's style of play that they'd beaten us in 2010 with a kind of a movement that we probably wouldn't have seen in the years previous. Up to that, it was kind of everyone takes on their man and best player wins. 2010, him and O'Shea. And it's interesting to see his influence on probably Darry Egan, who is now in charge of Wexford, and the change in their style of play. But Eamon O'Shea was over Tipperary that time as a coach. And the movement that Lara Corbett, Owen Kelly, you know, the Bonner Maher started introducing in them big games was something we hadn't seen before. So we had to learn from that as well. So we were probably coming from a different place. We were coming with the same team. We just had to recharge the batteries, get the hunger. And, you know, I think 2010... Tipperary were bet by traditionally Kilkenny's biggest rivals. You know, our fathers, grandfathers, it was Tipperary was their, you know, biggest opposition. The great, you know, Hell's Kitchen and the John Dials, the Jimmy Dials, you know, the team of the 60s, the great Tipperary team of that era. So they grew up watching them being beaten by them. So our chance then was to, you know, I suppose turn the tables. So when they beat us in 2010, it was a big, after winning all the moderns, it was a big dent to our pride, you know. So we just came back all guns blazing. A different scenario, I think, to this current. You know, they lost the Fillion McMahons, Bernard Brogan, you know, all these top players, you know, Keane O'Sullivan, like the Forrers they've lost even, you know, Dermot. And so I think it's just a different style. I think Cluxton as well, Owen, like, he probably will go down. Like, you know, the greatest players, Jack O'Shea in football, like the Gooch, you know, Brian Munns, all these guys. But Cluxton has to be, you know, nearly up to, you know, with them. He has to be in the top three or four there. And like he never gave a spare kick out. Like he was able to bring forwards into the play by their movement. He was able to pinpoint them that, you know, it's going to be very difficult for any goalie to pick up that slack. And you know, so I think that's probably a major difference in this Dublin team and our team.
Eamon O'Shea talked about the unbearable lightness of being. I remember sitting in his presence. I think it might have been Lara Corbett's. We did a show down there and he was like, oh, that was, you know, and his inspiration is a magic realist Czech writer from the 50s. You're like, well, this is different gravy that you were up against in that All-Ireland that time. And O'Shea's influence can't really be understated. But you brought up Darry Egan there. That's really interesting because, like, the difference in style seems to be quite pronounced from what Wexford were doing, and I think we'd written Wexford off really at the end of the Davy era. Like, this is going to be a team who's spent, it's going to be very difficult for them to get back on track, but here they are straight away raring to go, like they're a team completely re-energised.
Yeah, they are, and like that's amazing what a little bit of freshness can do, you know, and a little bit of a change. Like, you often say a change is as good as a rest year. Like, you know, I think, like, Darry Egan being there, like, the Wexford board deserve huge credit over the last maybe 10 years, Ger. They started off by bringing in Liam Dunn. Like, Wexford, if you go back to the results before Liam Dunn came in, you know, they were really starting to slip down into the second, the third tier. Liam Dunn came in as you know, massive success he had with Aulark, both as a player and as a manager. Just a fiercely determined guy. Standards were going to be set really, really high. And he set them for 5 years. Had a few great wins. But what he set was a foundation in Wexford hurling. And then they came along, asked Davy Fitz to get involved. And like what Davy done, like I've been down in Wexford, I work down there sometimes, like every young lad is going down with a hurl. You know, there'll be a huge number now of GDOs, the Games Development Officers, down there. They're all just after being employed over the last, you know, 5-10 years. So Davy Fitz has brought a huge, huge energy, a huge enthusiasm. And it's back to being like, that. If you remember, Wexford football was going very strong. It was nearly 50-50 at this stage. The footballers were nearly overpowering the hurlers. Now it's gone totally the opposite again. And I think Davy Fitz, and just what he brought, the energy, the enthusiasm, the just joy of the game. And we're seeing that now because they're not just slipping away. They're bringing in new players, Ger. And now they're after implementing Darry Egan as their new manager. And as I said, he's bringing probably the knowledge of the Liam Sheedy and Eamon O'Shea, that kind of, you know, difference in tactics and that. So it's going to be interesting to see Wexford this year. I was at the Laois versus Wexford game in Rathdowney. It was the first Welsh Cup game. And the big difference I noticed was they were trying to get Conor McDonald and whoever else was inside, could be Rory or someone inside with him, one-on-one. And suddenly these guys in the full forward line, they're going from battling against two or three spare defenders to just 1v1. And if you see Rory O'Connor's goal against Antrim, up there in Antrim, the ball came in, it was against Clare down Nennis. Ball came in, one-on-one into the corner, rounded his man, goal. And that's the difference. So if you're against two or three spare defenders, suddenly then, you know, it's a point. You have to, point is your best chance. So I think Dara has changed around things and brought probably a freshness to the whole setup.
So where are we at then in terms of one-on-one defending? Is there a movement away from the sweeper if you're seeing those chances? And I guess is the reaction to that going to be a reversion to that to try and stop Wexford getting into those one-on-one positions?
Yeah, I think what Limerick have been probably the best team in the country over the last couple of years is holding on to the ball before you give in the ball to the full forward line. So Gerard Hegarty or Tom Arcy, they look up. If the boys are free inside making the run, they'll give it in. But if they're being held or if there's a spare guy back, they will just play around with it around the half hour line and put it over the bar. So I think most people have been playing catch up in that game regards. They get the ball, they look up and they're just going to give it in. And I often see that the teams emerging now, they were for the last couple of years, they bring it out lovely as far as midfield, but then they just give in a 50-50 ball. As opposed to Limerick, they bring it out as far as midfield and they either give in a 60-40 ball in favour of Aaron Gillan or Seamus Flanagan, or they hold it up, play it back across the field, back ways and then over the bar. So as I think most other teams have been playing the other way. They bring it up lovely, the same as Limerick as far as midfield or half-back line, then they give in a 50-50 ball, if you like, high, low, it doesn't really matter. And I think that's where we're starting to see a change there. We saw it with Cork last weekend. I've seen a few games with Wexford, we'll say, at the start of the year. So now when they give it in, it's nearly a 60-40 ball.
I had one last question I wanted to ask you before we go, and it's about the Dubs. The Dubs, on the other hand, didn't make a change. Matty Kenny's been there now a good while. It's definitely his team, the implementation of his style of play, the relationship that he has with the players is kind of deep-seated at this point, and they're definitely responding to that as well. And they look like a group who are kind of coming to some kind of peak and some kind of fruition as well. I know, again, it's early stages and they've obviously targeted the early stages of the league to be ready ahead of everybody else, but they're going to bounce into the championship with a lot of confidence.
They will, and confidence is huge. It's another part of the whole setup, Ger. You play with confidence, you get an extra couple of points, you play with a bit more gusto, you play with a bit more fire. You know, instead of half hitting the ball going for a score, you drive it over with confidence. And that's what they seem to be playing with. I think Matty Kenny, you see, winning dictates everything, Ger. You win, wasn't it a great decision to stick with a guy? Towards say, if you bring in a new guy during the off season and you win, wasn't it great to freshen it up? And I think it's all dictated by whether you win or not that following year. Now it's a great decision for Matty Kenny to stay on. In fairness to Matty, he spent 2 or 3 years there during COVID. Never really got to, you know, the first couple of years, you know, the training was haphazard or on and off. Now he's after getting a good spell with these guys. Like he has proven with Galway teams and Railway Cup teams in the past, he can do it. He has proved it with Coola in the past. He can win. He has the stuff to do it. And then you back it up like, you know, Dublin are doing phenomenal work up there. They won the Leinster Colleges there recently enough. Again, so What is this team different? Like, if you go back to last year's Leinster final, they beat Galway in the semi-final, and then they're missing four players with COVID. So again, you know, interrupted that season. This year they seem to have their full, you know, crew of players. Eamon Dillon is making great impact off the bench. Ronan Hayes is after turning into a terrific player. Danny Sutcliffe is back to his best, winning high balls. So Cromie out around midfield. So I think what they are is that they're now their best players back again, and you know, hopefully to get an injury free run, you know, for the coming few weeks.
If you were Matty Kenny and you've had really great experiences of getting the best out of Conor Callaghan, are you ringing him and saying, look, that football team, they're not going anywhere? You can see there's no glory in trying to chase another All-Ireland in football, but if you were to win an All-Ireland in hurling, that would turn you into one of the greatest GAA players of all time. Unquestionably. Would you not just be tempting him? Would you not be ringing him up and saying, no pressure here, Colm, but, you know, greatness is right there for you?
Sure. I think the first decision he needs to make is get you into his backroom team, because I'd be WhatsApping him, I'd be Snapchatting him, I'd be putting it on Instagram. I'd be doing everything I can to bring in Conor Callaghan. I think, you know, the Henry Shefflin move to Galway has to be a lesson probably to every club, every county in the country. Why don't you ask? Like, who would have thought Henry Shefflin would have went? Like, I drove up there last September, October to Galway. Like, it's a terrible road. Like, 2.5 hours of just hardship driving. There's no, you know, you're not on a motorway. It's tough, tough driving. They went down and they asked him. They had the conference. They had the, you know, the mayor would all say, listen, why won't we let him say no? And now he's up there in Galway, and again, kind of like a Davy Fitz impact in Wexford. It's not just an impact on Galway, it's an impact on the whole county, really. There's an energy about the place. And going back to your point about Conor Callaghan, ask him. Ask him a few times. If he says no the first time, make him say no the second time. And, you know, and maybe it's not straightforward to come in and you have to train every day of the week. You know, work around it. You have to make exceptions for players like him. So I would. I'd be asking him every day of the week, all day long, Jared. So it'd be a great addition.
It's been a while since we've seen Conor Callaghan in the national sense of things, of you know, going on an All-Ireland run with his club, with the hurley in his hand. And obviously there's been no inter-county hurling for him. So over the last few years, Tommy, is there a bit of brushing up to do, or does he just slot into... I know this is a completely fictitious scenario we're discussing here, but if that did actually become fact, does he seamlessly slot into, like, being one of the best hurlers in the country? Because I think you had him down as one of the best, maybe the best hurler in the country when Coola were All-Ireland champions a few years ago.
Yeah, and I think he, at that time, he definitely deserved it, because he can do it on the biggest stage of the club scene. He can do it anywhere, as far as I can see. What does he have to do? Like, anyone, I suppose, that watches Conor Callaghan playing hurling, like Mick Finley even said that time for Kilkenny, like, it wasn't born out of a first touch. It was mostly running onto the ball, using his speed, using his strength, using his ability to go past players. That's Conor Callaghan's strength. If not, ball comes into him, say, 90 mile an hour, he controls it, goes around the guy. His guy was nearly always running onto a ball. Like, he had huge power, huge speed. And that's how he got his goals. And that's what made him, you know, such a phenomenal player, that he could turn games. Like the great players with the burst of speed, the Ronaldo's, the Messi, they get the ball, they're gone, goal, before you even look up. So I think, I think just get him back in, get him pucking off a wall, and I think it'll all start coming together. Listen, the great players can pick it up quick enough. Well, give him back 2 weeks and they just have it again. So, I'd be bringing him in and just... You know, I'd say he'd have it back fairly quickly.
I'm sure the Dublin hurling supporters are rolling their eyes at us even having this conversation, but it is interesting to consider that there aren't that many other counties who would have access to really top quality players who we've seen win Club All-Irelands and be the best player, who are just unavailable to them. It's very rare in other counties that anybody would pick not to play with an All-Ireland contender, and sprinkling him in would actually make a significant difference. There probably does come a point in the future where if the hurling team can continue at its current progression, where some players will pick hurling over football.
Yeah, that's it. You were growing up in Dublin for the last 15 years, there was no choice really. The footballers were just so good. It was, they were like a Premier League team, really. They were famous everywhere. They played a beautiful brand of football. They did things the right way. They had great management teams, you know, going back to even to the Pillar. You know, real good personalities. Jim Gavin, now Desi. Like, it was definitely, they had the X factor. So the only change, I suppose, that can happen is if Dublin start winning. So hurling now. So if they start winning, suddenly you have a choice to make. You know, like they had a great win under Anthony Daly back in the Leinster final that time. If, you know, they got to the semi-final and could have, you know, could have got to the All-Ireland final that year against, I think it was Cork. And who knows, like, if they could get back there again under Matty Kenny, get the bit of luck this time and get over the line. And then absolutely Dublin will become a powerhouse because, listen, they have millions of people up there. Their clubs are huge. And they're huge. You know, we often go up there playing challenge games and that. There's a huge love of the game up there. And as soon as they start winning, maybe, you know, Leinster finals, because they're doing it at every other grade, under 21 minors schools. So this is the missing piece in the jigsaw. And like you go to the All-Ireland Champions this year, Limerick. If they were missing one player, say if they were missing Keane Lynch, would they have won the All-Ireland last year? If they were missing Kyle Hayes, Aaron Gillan, you know, would they have won the All-Ireland last year? So look, flip that with Dublin. If they have one extra player that chose hurling instead of football, possibly they can be All-Ireland champions. Definitely competing, Ger, you know?
Yeah, and look, there's no bias here. I don't really care if he plays one way or the other. It's just be really great experiment to see what happened, because I know all the Dublin football fans are already angrily texting in saying
he's been on the match day programme for the Dublin footballers this year. It's not going to happen, but you never know.
Yeah, but I think the interesting point you make there, Gerry, is that possibly not for Conor Callaghan now. That probably ship has sailed. It's the next Conor Callaghan, the next lad coming out of minor. This is the guys they need to focus on, Dublin. Do everything they can to sell them the game of hurling, sell them the love of the game of hurling and the future that they're going. I think that's what they really need to do. Like, how often have you seen a manager in another sport coming in on a losing season and suddenly turn things around with his passion, with his, you know, his influence, his ability to get people to run behind him? So I think Dublin, that's where probably they need to put in the effort, is the next guy that has to make the choice, let him choose hurling, put all your eggs in that basket, you know, and do everything you can to get him on board.
I just have one last question, Tommy, just on Henry Shefflin in Galway. It was actually just after the Limerick win when Fintan Burke came out. He got man of the match, I think, so he was speaking and he was saying that there's no stats, there's nothing, we're just focused on enjoying our hurling. Are you surprised by that? Are you surprised that that's kind of the way Shefflin's gone, that it is all about kind of free-flowing, I guess, instinctive hurling rather than being bogged down and getting straitjacketed, I guess, by statistics and by a rigid game plan?
Like I know Henry Shefflin, Richie O'Neill, these guys are guys that are massively prepared, put huge hours of work into preparing teams. Like, Fintan Burke mightn't be seeing statistics in that, but I'm sure Richie O'Neill and Henry Shefflin and his team are. They're probably just probably portraying it, probably giving the messages in a different way, I would imagine, Owen, because I know Henry Shefflin since he was 18 years of age. There's no one that would prepare better, a team or himself. So statistics, yes, Fintan Burke might be seeing the statistics, but I'd be shocked if Henry and Ricky O'Neill and their team aren't looking at them day in, day out. They're not living back in the old days, Owen. They're looking at video analysis. They're looking at stats. I would be guessing, I put my house on it, to be honest, you know. So I'd say it's the messages they're portraying to the boys is probably keeping it simple, but I'd say it's just in a different way.
That's what you want to see, isn't it? That, like, for no second was I suggesting that he hasn't done his preparation or anything like that, but I guess there is a sense that some players can get too bogged down and get given too much unnecessary information.
Yeah, I think probably different ways of giving a message. Like, you come up to a team and you say, Owen, there was 40 hooks and blocks last weekend, you didn't do any of them, what's going on? And that's one way of giving it. You could also say to the team, listen lads, we had 100 hooks and blocks last year when we won a game, we only now at 40, what's going on? Towards a simpler way would just go over to the lad and goes, you're not working hard enough, I haven't seen you hooking and blocking, what's going on? You know, there's different ways of conveying a message, and it depends on your style. I'd say it depends on the manager, really, on what way he's going to give it. So there's more than one way of doing it, and I would imagine Henry's way will probably be pulling the lad to the side and asking him the questions like that with regards throwing stats at him.
Were you guys wearing GPS? Had it come in by the time you'd finished up?
I think they're starting to come in, but you're kind of trying to avoid them.
Because
you know, this, like the GPS, you know, like the only kind of my explanation on GPS is like, surely you can see it with your eyes how a player is doing, you know. And like, I remember games where I ran around, you know, I could have done 10 kilometers and had a terrible game. And another game, you did half the running, but you were more clued in, you were more focused, you were where the ball was, and you had a much better game. So, you know, Jared, I think GPSs have to be used probably in the right way. I know hurling or football is more a game where there's a lot of running, but positional sense in hurling is massive. Like, you have a cornerback or a fullback or even a centre back, you could be running all over the place and doing nothing, because you could have another lad with, you know, yeah. He knows where the ball is going to be. You know, Brian Whelan, I always love the story about Brian Whelan. He was playing beside the guy, or he was managing the team, I think, and he just couldn't understand how the lads weren't winning the ball. Like, and, well, how do you win it, Brian? You just go where the ball is and you win it. You know, this. So in his head, because he just went where the ball, he was doing it since he was probably 5 or 6 years of age, blowing ball himself and Johnny Pilkington and Dahi Regan and the lads, you know. And that was his way of doing it. So I think GPS is, they have to be used with kind of common sense knowledge, really. But yeah, go back there where they know they're only coming in that time, and they try to stay away from, really, because we're only giving out the 2 or 3 players at a time. We didn't have to.
How did they pick who got them? Was it like the lads they thought weren't doing any work? It's like, right, and it's kind of like, this is the special bib for you because we don't think you're doing any work, so off you go.
I was just handing to Conor Fogarty and these lads. We knew they'd run and they used their fitness. We say, listen, they're best used on me. So we just, you know, I'm not sure. I can't really, to be honest. But I remember there was only a few of them anyway. You tried not to have one, anyway.
Tommy, good stuff. Great to have you with us. Thanks.
Okay, lads. Good morning. Bye-bye. Bye.
Tommy Walsh back with us this morning. Suitably whetting the appetite for this year's championship, I think.
Oh, yeah. Just want to watch hurling now. OTB
AM with Gillette. Get into your flow with the new Gillette Labs Razor with exfoliating bar.